Hi, I'm Shanessa, and I went to an HBCU.
What's up, brothers and sisters? This is Jayla, and welcome back to another episode of I Went to an HBCU. Today, we have a very special guest, the wonderful Miss Shanessa Sweeney. She is a professional writer, a professional actor, and a professional acting coach. Welcome. Welcome to the podcast, Shanessa.
Thank you. Thank you, Jayla. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So, all right, let's go ahead and get started. So, just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, your high school experiences, and things of that nature.
I'm from Dayton, Ohio originally. That's where I was born and reared in my teenage years, and then I immediately flew the coop after that. But I'm a Midwest girl, grew up in the inner city. And I went to a high school, Meadowdale High School of International Studies, which was one of the main major high schools, one of the five major high schools that was in Dayton, Ohio. That's a part of the city of Dayton, Ohio. I came out of class of 1996, right? I'm Gen X. The
All
best
right.
class to come out, you know what I'm saying? Yes, I mean, grew up in them 80s and them 90s. Our class was extremely specifically our class was an extremely is an extremely close class, and we were known as one of the cool classes, but also very smart. So my environment, being around my peers, we were all pretty astute students, right? Pretty, even though we were hood kids, we all had these, we were all pretty smart. A lot of us were in like the IB programs and whatnot. I was not. I was pretty much an average graded student. However, I was still, just wasn't applying myself. But the school that I went to, like I said, is one of five of the inner city schools in Dayton. I was always fostered with, at that time, a lot of love. Our teachers really cared about us, and and these were teachers, I don't it really you don't get a lot of this now unless you're like in a small knit community. But then you had teachers who actually lived in the communities with you, and so they really cared about these children that they see in every day, so it wasn't, we weren't out of pocket with the disrespect or anything like that. We weren't, the most perfect children or anything like that. However, we definitely respected authority, and so because of that, we were fostered around, we were fostered with a lot of love in school. So everybody knew everybody, and yeah, I had some really, really great teachers that really took the time to actually teach. They just weren't there just getting a paycheck. And I mean, we're talking black, white, Spanish. It didn't matter. It didn't
So a
matter. They,
very
you know, they,
diverse setting.
yeah. Yeah. Now the school itself, the student population itself was predominantly black. So I've always been in a predominantly black environment until I graduated college. But yeah, the student population was predominantly black, but we did have a nice mixture of, diverse teachers, that lived where we lived. Black, white, didn't matter.
And so, how was your exposure to HBCUs at the time when you were in high school? Because I know how it is with sometimes with teachers, like they may have not went to an HBCU, they may have not, known as much about them to even expose their students to it. So, did your teachers expose you to HBCUs, or just they just exposed y'all to college in general?
So no, luckily for me, no, my teacher didn't expose me to HBCUs, but luckily for me, I had the experience of going to Central States Upward Bound program. So I was exposed earlier before I even got to high school. I always knew that I was going to an HBCU. Mm-hmm. When I was about eight or nine, my brother was in the CSU Upward Bound program. And so I went to a game, like a track meet with them one time, and I fell in love. I was like, I'm definitely going
right.
to, you know, this type of school. This is for me. And then I finally was able to watch School Days, Spike Lee's School Days, and that solidified it. And then also I grew up watching A Different World, the TV series. So those I had already knew before I even got to high school that HBCU was the way that I was going. And I was in a scholars program, which was for, it's called the Sinclair Young Scholars Program, which was a community college there in Dayton. And you could go to this, you go to this program and you get a scholarship, a full ride to this community college. But I was like, I'm bypassing that. I'm not even going to do it because I already knew I was going to an HBCU, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but my teachers, no, they didn't encourage, they didn't tell you about HBCU unless you specifically asked. I don't even think a lot of them went to HBCUs. I might've had one or two that I can recall that actually went to an HBCU. But no, and my counselor, she was terrible at her job, honestly. She was so caught up in her, what was going on in her personal life. She was not studying us. She didn't give us any kind of guidance on what to do. She didn't. You know, so it had it not been for the Upward Bound program, you know, I don't know if I would have found my way to an HBCU.
Yeah, and talk a little bit more about that Upward Bound program, because a lot of students who have that same experience of not being exposed to different schools, they also don't get a chance to tour these schools. And I know on a couple of episodes, I've actually said, you know, I've mentioned the Upward Bound program because I know it gives you a chance to actually live on campus. So talk about how, you know, you got in the Upward Bound and how the experience was for you.
One of the best experiences in my life. Again, I said, you know, I was introduced because my brother was in it, my big brother was in it, and he was in it for a couple of years. So he would be gone for the summer, and then sometimes we could meet up. And the guy who ran our Upward Bound program was Dr. Joseph Lewis. He was a Kappa man, and he was a very proud Kappa man. And he would always, you know, make us say this chant. It's called Olo Kiki Julo. I forgot what it means. I'm so bad at it. But but then we would have to respond Harambe. And then he would say Amanla, and we say Owetu, you know. So these are all South African terms that of empowerment. Mm-hmm. And so being introduced to that at a young age, when it was my time to come around, because you had to be at least 12 or 13. And I got in it going into my eighth grade year, I believe. So I might have been like 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. years old, and we stayed on campus. We stayed on Central State's campus. The young lady who was my roommate then, we are still thick as thieves now. We had roommates. We had classes that we had to take. So, you know, for the morning portion, for like the, you know, like a school portion of the day, just as if you were in high school, you had to take classes, whether they were arts classes. We had to take a history class, and that's where Doc, that's where he taught class. And we learned all about HBCU history. We learned all about Black history, Black American history. We learned African history. So he was very, very strategic about, you know, empowering us, you know, and empowering us in a way that we weren't scared to go in public as our authentic Black selves. You know what I'm saying? Because we would be in the middle of nowhere, literally in the middle of nowhere. And if anybody knows anything about a lot of the Midwestern states, in particular Ohio, it's a lot of cornfields and a lot of white folks. And we would be, in the middle of nowhere at a McDonald's, and he would bust out. It'd be about 50 or 60 Black kids coming into a McDonald's. Olo Kiki Julo! And we all have to say, Arambe! And we say, oh, way too! And we would scare the living bejesus out of those white folks. And he loved it.
I bet they were looking like, oh my God, what is happening with them?
They, when I, yes, But he loved it, and we were complimented a lot. You know, he taught us how to, you know, really like really be who we are in our own space. You know, we had to take arts classes. You know, this is where I learned that I'm an artist. I really like I come from an artistic family, so I already knew that I had artistic ways, but I was able to direct a show. I was able to write a show that we all performed. You know, I was able to, you know, help coordinate and put a show together, produce an actual a fashion show. So as a youngster, I'm talking about as a 14-year-old. So he put us in these leadership positions, you know, and then we were amongst college students as well who were on campus taking summer classes. So then you get to see that experience, and the our tutor counselors, those like mentors, they were actual college students of that university. So they would be with us. And so if you needed to ask a question about if you were interested in college or anything, that's how I learned about Delta Sigma Theta, was through my tutor counselor. She was a Delta. Yep, she was a Delta, and she would just talk to us. You know, she was real cool. Her name was Vanessa. She was real cool and would talk to us, would ask us any questions we had. And, you know, so they were there to serve as mentors. So we were really extremely fortunate to be a part of that collective, to be a part. So yeah, it was solidified for me. I was definitely not going anywhere else but an HBCU.
That's absolutely amazing that all of that exposure came from that, you know, those. How many weeks were y'all with Upward Bound? Like two or
Ooh,
three?
no, we actually back then, I feel like I want to say we might have done like 2 months because we were there the entire summer. Yeah, we were there for the entire, and then at the end of the summer, we did a culminating trip. So he would take us, like, that was my first time going out of the country. We went to Canada. He took us to Niagara Falls. We did a bus trip to Niagara Falls. And you know, he just wanted to expose Black children. And we were all from the hood. So that was the other thing. And we were all ghetto hood children, you know. And so, and you know, and this is like, this is a program where your parents couldn't make a certain amount of money. So it was specifically geared to the, you know, was considered the disenfranchised, you know, or, you know, the quote unquote urban youth. It was specifically geared for us. And it also lasted throughout the year. We just didn't stay on campus. They had a building to where we would go. We would have to do tutor sessions. So we would go like every Tuesday and Thursday after school, and you spend like 2 hours doing your homework and getting some, you know, getting some tutoring or whatever. And you know, that was a requirement that you had to do.
So y'all listen, there's programs like this out here that give you all of this exposure. Upward Bound is one of them, and I'm sure because Upward Bound is part of the TRIO program, so I'm definitely sure that there are other programs in that and other programs like TRIO that can help you and give you all of this exposure. So please, please, please look for these programs while you're in high school, especially if you're in a high school where unfortunately you might not be getting as much exposure as you should to
All
HBCUs
right.
and schools. So what led you to choose, because you did Upward Bound at Central State, but you ended up going to Alabama State.
I ended up going to Alabama State. Yes, I did. I was desperate to get out of Ohio. I was desperate. I was like, and you know, I went to Central State, that was bad, and I had a grant to go to Central State. I had a $4,000 grant, you know, promised to me every year to go. And that would have been in state, so I probably wouldn't have had any, you know, a whole lot of money to pay back. But I was desperate to get out of Ohio. You know, I had done Upward Bound, so I knew that campus. So I actually, because I knew I wanted to go into performing, I was trying to go to Howard. So that was like my first choice. I was like, I want to go to You know, I wanted to go to Howard. You know, Howard was not in the cards for me. And I also waited too late. I waited too late to apply. Because again, our counselor was, you know, she really was not doing a good job of counseling. And so a lot of us kind of fell under the wayside in terms of applying to these schools and stuff, and, you know, and meeting the deadlines. And we didn't know what we needed to do. We didn't know, you know, like how to go about it. I hadn't, even though I did Upward Bound, I still had no idea how to go about applying to Howard and what I needed to go to Howard. And so I missed the deadline. I missed any deadline for scholarships, didn't know how to apply to scholarships. So I just, and a part of that was hers, but a part of it was me too, not really learning to look for, you know, these things when I was, you know, when I was in school. I just wasn't doing it. So I missed a lot. So when Alabama State was like, well, you know, hey, you know, the recruiters came from Alabama State and they said, you know, one of our, you're going into theater. Well, we have, they told a lie. They said that Debbie Allen was teaching there. That was lie number one. However, they also said that, you know, the woman that plays Aunt Etta Kibbe on In the Heat of the Night, well, she's there. And I didn't know who she was, but I knew the show. Uh-huh. In the Heat of the Night. So I knew the actor that they were talking about. And come to find out, that was actually my director, Dr. Tania Stewart. So when they told me that she was teaching there, I was like, oh, okay, I'll go. You know, and so it was a school that accepted me, you know, as at the last minute. They had a very giving spirit. So they accepted me with my mediocre GPA. And that's how I wound up, you know, moving hundreds of miles away from my mother and everything that I knew.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you're going so far away. So what are your first impressions when you get to Alabama State from Ohio? Because I know that's like a culture shock.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. It was hot. it was hot. And, you know, and you talk about, you, on your previous episodes, you talk about touring the schools. First, that is so important. I feel like you must tour the schools, because I didn't tour it. I didn't care. I was very, you know, and I was just, and I've always been the type, well, whatever comes my way, you know, I'll deal with it. So, but I didn't tour the school. So when I got there, it just looked like a regular, it looked like an HBCU that, you know, like a, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just was like, oh, okay. You
right. Know, yeah. Like,
it just looked like all these old buildings, you know, and it was just like black bodies just moving around. And I loved it. I loved it. You know, moving into my dorm. And I moved down there with my best friend. So my best friend from home, she came down, as a student as well. So we were already good with living with each other. We stayed in the athletic dorm because I guess we were the last on the, you know, on the totem pole to get out. Right. So we were in the athletic freshman dorm, for girls, and we did have communal bathrooms and, you know, the showers were individual, but it was still in a communal bathroom. And so one of the key things for those that might have to be in this living situation is you're going to have to get up at the crack of dawn's patootie and get in that shower first. If you don't want everybody else's whatever on you, you know, so that's, and I'm a stickler for that. Like, I like to get in a fresh shower. And I knew that. So I would get up very early and I would be one of the first ones to get in one of those showers. So, you know, that was the key. That was the key. You know, but it was fun. It was fun living in that way. I love the men. They were at you too. When you are freshman. When you are a fresh meat, what they say, you are fresh meat.
The fresh and meat.
And they would just like, yes. It was so many so many different levels of blackness when I saw it, and I just was in love. I was like, this is exactly, you know, you see the different regions, you see what
Right,
people,
right.
you know, where people come from, how they represent their region. You know, people from Miami, they look different, they walk different. You know, people from Detroit, they look different, they walk, you know what I'm saying? And it was so interesting because you could see as I started to, you know, to make my way around there, you could see like the different regions click up. You know, so you have the Midwestern, or you got the Ohio people click up. You got the Miami people click up, the Atlanta crew, you got them clicking up. So it was interesting, you know, to see that coming on to campus and just making your way around it. It was a very, 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 one of the happiest times of my life was, you know, coming up on that campus, being so glad to be there.
All that black joy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was just hot. It was just hot.
It
you
was
know,
just
but
hot. That's
hot
why
and sticky.
I made sure I was like, yeah, I had the tour spell me before I went down there because I knew Atlanta was hot. And oh my goodness. And see, Spelman's dorms don't have air. So that
That's
hot,
crazy.
that no air. I was like, ooh, all right. This is, I got to get used to this.
Now that is crazy. Do they still not have any air? It's just, that's not right. That's inhumane.
They don't. So they have like, they, I guess they got it set up to where, because I lived in a dorm with air, but they have it set up where they kind of show you the ropes on how to get your air conditioner in the window. But I really do hope and pray that this next, they're supposed to be doing something to the dorms, like a major project. I really hope that major project is putting air in those dorms this film. Please save these women.
Y'all cost too much for them girls to not have no air.
I used to go to my friend's room. I'd be like, girl, I don't see how y'all do this. It's sweating in here. The room feel heavy.
Oh, even a cold shower can save you. Now, Spelman, now y'all need to come on now. Now, we're not going to do this no any longer. Any longer. See, that's the stuff we would protest.
Do you have questions for alumni? Want to know more about the HBCU you want to attend? Want to know about the HBCU that you attend now? Follow I Went to an HBCU on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook and ask your questions in the comments. So tell me about your time on campus. Like, what activities did you do? And like your major and your classes and your professors?
Yeah, so I was a theater major. I graduated with my bachelor's in theater arts. And from my freshman year, from the moment I got there on campus, you know, I was involved in theater. I found my way to the theater department, which was at that time a very the way that Dr. Stewart ran that theater department, she ran it as a community theater. So it's very family oriented, very tight knit. So I found my way there and I didn't leave. I didn't leave from over there. I spent literally day and night in that building. We had, when I met her on campus, she had on a sandwich board trying to recruit people to come over there. And I was like, I'm a theater major. She was like, okay, want to make sure you come over, you know, and join the guild. I said, okay, which was the Dramatics Guild. So as soon as I auditioned for the first play, it was on and cracking from there. I was in my first production, which was a classical, as a freshman, you know, which was unheard of. Like, freshmen didn't really get on stage. So I was welcomed. I was loved immediately, pretty much, because I was pretty much the only freshman that came in my class for the theater department. So I think I was the only incoming new freshman that was in my department. So I became everybody's baby. So I spent pretty much all of my time over there. I was struggling in my classes, in my core classes, when I first got there. And, you know, word to the wise, and this is what I tell my daughter, who is also going to be entering into the college the year after next. Those 8 o'clock classes on an HBCU campus is different from 8 o'clock classes in high school. 8 o'clock classes in college is way different from 8 o'clock in high school.
Right.
Choose a 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, because I can guarantee, it's going to be a struggle getting to that 8 o'clock.
Oh, wait.
It's a struggle. And that was a struggle for me, you know, because nobody is holding you and keeping you accountable, like your parents or like a guardian, to get you up to go to that class. And if you don't have the willpower to take your little self to sleep the night before so that you can get the rest, and that can be quite challenging to do because you're in a new environment. So your sleeping pattern is going to be off, your eating pattern, you know, is going to be off, you know, so things are going to get kind of, because when you're in a shift, things kind of jumble around. So that it can be challenging to, you know, to transition. And for me, it was a challenge to transition from my mother's house into even though I was very independent in my mom's house, but moving into the young adulthood, into this incubator of adulthood, was very challenging. And so I slipped in my grades. I didn't, you know, they weren't the, you know, the first semester wasn't my shining glory semester. I was like struggling with my classes, struggling, just trying to adjust. And then when I started taking my theater classes, my GPA shot up because I was in something that I loved and was having a good time. And it's not to say that the teachers didn't care. All of my professors, I felt like, really cared. And that's the beautiful thing about going to an HBCU versus a PWI, because, and I know I went to a PWI for grad school. So at an HBCU, when you have professors that they have a lot of the professors actually come from HBCUs, if it's not that particular, that's that particular HBCU, a lot of them come from HBCUs. So they understand your struggle. But they also, you know, they find it extremely important to, you know, they find it extremely important to guide you. You know what I'm saying? Now, they're not going to waste too much time if you're not showing any effort. Mm-hmm. But they do take a little extra time, because the class sizes are typically, you know, usually smaller than they would be at a PWI. So you can kind of get a little bit more attention if needed, with a HBCU professor. If HBCU, let me say this, because I know some HBCUs are very large, but a great majority of them are set up so that these class sizes are smaller, and, you know, and there's much more attention to detail for you as a student. So I had great professors, but it was different in the sense that they weren't going to coddle you.
Right.
You know,
right.
So you weren't, you know, we're not going to spoon feed you this. It's your responsibility to read that syllabus. Once I hand it out, I'm not going to go back over it. I'm not going to, you need to read it and follow everything that's in that syllabus. And then everything is due. It says it right there. So if you miss the due date, that's on you. So nobody is holding your hand through the process, you know? So that was different for me. But once I got the hang of it, I was like, oh, okay. And then you start to forge these relationships with your professors. You know, it was such a tight-knit community. Alabama State is like literally in the heart of, you know, the ghetto. Is down the street from where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s house was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So literally in walking distance, it literally across the street from Alabama State's campus is where Nat King Cole grew up, was raised and grew up. So we had a whole row of houses, of like these little shotgun houses, right off of our campus. And these houses were historical historical houses, because these were the houses where, you know, people live in the community, but it was also where they did a lot of working for the civil rights movement. So it's a lot of history, a lot of family, a lot of things intertwined around that campus. And so, you know, the people that was working on it, that was living on it, they would all be in the community, you
Right,
know.
right.
So we out here, we in a grocery store, we kicking it. We out here. So you do forge these really tight bonds with your professors. I did. I especially did. So the theater was the my main thing that I was involved in. As I had matriculated even further, I started getting involved in, you know, just more things like with choir. There was a choir that called Tribe of Judah that one of my good friends from Chicago, he had started, and they, you know, they were the premier. It was quite a few gospel choirs on campus, but they were the new wave, you know. They wore fatigues and, you know what I'm saying, and they jumped around. They didn't, you know. So I got involved in that, and then I pledged Delta Sigma Theta, Beta Eta chapter. Ooh. Yep. So got involved in that. I ran for Miss ASU, you know, the queen of the what's the name, the queen of the HBCU. You know, I didn't win it.
Yeah.
I didn't win it, but I ran.
Look, did you went up there and ran? Because, honey, I would have never went up there. I always went to go watch the pageants, but I wouldn't have dared gone up there and run for nothing. Oh, no.
Yeah,
Be
and you know, and
scared.
I did it because I had always wanted to, but I didn't realize what it would entail. Like, that it's a lot, though, what the queens really have to do, like,
Oh,
and what you have to
yeah.
do to run and stuff. Like, it's a lot that goes into that. It's a lot of money that goes into that. You know, you got to have your ironclad campaign team. Like, it's a lot. It's a
Yeah.
lot. And so it was stressful. I was breaking up with my first love at that time too. And
Oh, wow.
I was breaking down at every turn, but it was a good thing. And, you know, I enjoyed it, and it was a great experience. So yeah, it was a great experience. But that's pretty much it. Because I was so involved in theater, we had to do a lot of community things. So we were out in the community with our shows, and we did a lot of stuff on campus. So I actually became, you know, fairly popular because of theater, what, you know, all of the stuff that we had to do. So I didn't really have a lot of time to do a whole lot of different things because theater was so community involved and so campus involved. So yeah, it was I remember hearing on your episode about you being in the band and how most of your time is you have to commit to band activities because you know, that's life. It's like that
Right.
is it takes up your it consumes your life,
It
you
consumes
know.
it.
Yes, it consumes your college life, and that was how it was for me in theater as well. Yeah.
But you're consumed in something that you love, though.
I was consumed in something that I love. Yep, I absolutely was. I became the president of our Dramatics Guild. I was also Miss Dramatics Guild. I was the same. I think the same year I was like Miss Black, Miss for Apple Phi Alpha. So I did quite a bit. I was also, you know, like a mentor, you know, to the younger ones. And we also taught, and that was another thing my director did. She ran summer camps, summer theater camps. And so at the age of 18, I'm teaching children and teenagers, you know, to do what I do. And I'm working with them. So I had to, so every year, every summer, I didn't go home. I went home, I think, the first summer, but after that I stayed and I worked the camps. And so that honed my teaching skill, my natural ability to teach. That's where I started to learn how to cultivate that skill set, you know. And in that skill set, we're writing scripts, because we wrote all original scripts, all, you know, when for these children. And we were working with hundreds of kids.
Oh,
Like our
wow.
TAPS, yeah, our TAPS program, which was from the age of 6 to 12, we had I feel like at one point in time we had like 175, 200 at one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was a 2 week 2 week program, and then our 3T camp 3T was for ages 13 to 17, and they actually stayed on campus for a week, and we would in a lot of them, and they would it would be packed too, and a lot of those students are grown now, and they have their own businesses or their professional performers, they're professional actors. As a matter of fact, one of our babies, one of my babies, Twitch, everybody knows as Twitch,
Oh,
from
yeah.
Ellen
Ellen.
DeGeneres' show.
Yeah.
He is actually one of our babies. He's one of our 3T babies. So he grew up in our program. So yeah, he's I actually taught, well, got a chance to teach him in acting. So
Wow. I bet that really, it really hit home for y'all when he passed.
Oh, girl, say devastated. We were devastated. Yeah, we were devastated. Yeah, because he's really the shining light that everybody saw. We been saw that. We saw that years ago, and he really was. He really was a beautiful, beautiful human being, a beautiful human being with a beautiful soul. So yeah, and he was always like that. So that was a. That was hurtful, but we have success stories like that come through there all the time, and so being a part of that is a blessing. Yeah, it's a big blessing, but yeah.
That is a blessing that y'all get to, inspire people that go on to be, successful, and all of that coming from, your HBCU.
And HBCU, where people like to say that, HBCU is not, they want to look down on it and say that it's not of a high caliber, but let me tell you, HBCUs produce some of the best performers, and I'm not talking about in the arts, I'm talking about in any job, in any career. HBCUs have to we rise to the top because we have to, because the climate and the environment tells you in that you have to be this time this much more better. You have to be this 20 times better.
Right,
You know,
right.
and so that is the theme of all HBCUs. When you get here, you need to be 20 times better. So we are actually performing at a higher level than most. But people don't, because they have this view, this point of view of we always partying, we're loud, and yeah, we party. Yep, we sure do. We sure do. But we also work very hard to earn that party,
Right,
you know, so
we have a lot of fun, but we also do a whole lot of work.
yes, a whole lot of work.
And so don't come to an HBCU thinking it's going to be a cakewalk, because oh no, you are going to be challenged in so many different ways, and it's gonna make you so much better, and it's gonna make you a great professional, and just a great all around person, and when you stick through it. But it's some hard work, it's some challenges. It's not, nothing great in life comes easy. So
That part.
you have to take those challenges and, keep pushing. And like, the whole goal of this podcast is for any students who are having these types of challenges to have, something to listen to where you can see, oh, somebody else went through the same thing that I did, or, somebody's been in my shoes. And, that's what we're here for. And if y'all have questions, just make sure, y'all go find us on social media, but I'll get to more of that at the end. But yes, we're here to answer questions, and we're here to talk about, all of these hardships and successes that we've had, because it's all a part of the HBCU experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely.
Want to support the podcast? Contact us at IWTAHBCU@gmail.com to find out ways to donate. Again, that is IWTAHBCU@gmail.com. So now, take us to, you're getting ready to graduate, you're getting ready to get into your first job, or you stepping into your career. Do you feel like Alabama State prepared you for, you just said, you kind of already answered my question, but do you feel like, Alabama State prepared you for your first few steps into the working adult world?
Yes, absolutely. I think, I was eager, just like I was when I was leaving home for high school, eager to get out of Ohio. I was eager to get out of Alabama to start, I had been there for a long time. And I had already started working professionally while I was in college. So I done my, cause I'm an actor. I had done my first movie while I was in college. So I was definitely eager to get out and, and show the world what I had, craft wise. But I did feel, in all honesty, like, I had the talent. I just felt like I lacked confidence, because I knew that going out into the world, there would be rejection. And in my field, rejection is just a part of it. That's, but when I was at Alabama State, I was never rejected.
Right.
And so, you know what I mean? I was always chosen. I was always, chosen to do a task. I never had not anything that I had went for at Alabama State. I got it. Mm-hmm. So I knew the wisdom in me at that age, leaving college, I knew that that would be different, moving into the real world. And I didn't know how to transfer the confidence that I had in college into the real world. So that was challenging, for me. And I think what would have helped me is seeking out a mentor, somebody that could have, helped me transition. Seeking someone out that would, that could do that. So I would say that to, college students that might be listening, that are, leaving, getting ready to graduate. If you can find you a mentor, to help you transition, because it is an incubator, in college is an incubator type of system where you're in the real world, but you're safe. You're in a bubble. And so transitioning from that life to this next part of this next phase of life can be challenging, especially if you don't have for someone like me, I need bullet points. I need you to tell me, okay,
right,
this is what you need to do. You need to do this, 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 and that. You know what I'm saying? Well, I didn't have that leaving. I just had, and then too, I was kind of a hothead, so I would, hardly listen. So I would have definitely seeked out some mentorship. But it, I feel like it definitely, my next step out of college was going into grad school. I got the opportunity to go into grad school. I wasn't looking for grad school, but it came looking for me. Mm-hmm. So I took the opportunity. And so because I just felt like I felt like my school prepared me. I felt like, but like I said, I couldn't transfer the confidence. I didn't know how to transfer the confidence. So I needed, another system of incubation to help me build that up. And that's what I did. That's what I did. But I had enough audacity leaving school, enough audacity to say, I'm gonna try to work for a year and then go back to grad school. But I'm so glad that didn't work. That didn't work in my favor. And that I actually, because I would have been a mess. I would have been like, we wouldn't even be having this discussion, Jay. This wouldn't even be a thing. But but yeah, I definitely feel like my HBCU prepared me. From what I took from it, I'll say that I don't think that I took full advantage of the opportunities that were laid out for me at an HBCU. I think I took some, but if you take full advantage, I think you absolutely can only be on the success path unless you decide that you're not going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, like looking at everything you've done and looking at everything that you do now, what influences do Alabama State still have in your, career life now?
Well, the education aspect of it, I went back to actually teach at Alabama State.
Oh,
So it had such
yay.
a, I was a professor there, so in theater, and it had such a strong impact on me that that was actually one of my goals to do, was to go back and teach at my alma mater. And so I was able to fulfill that goal. So that's one aspect. Things that I feel like, it's, I'm so proud to say that I went to an HBCU. Like it's a different kind of pride that I walk in a space with because I went to an HBCU. And I had that, I don't know if I can necessarily explain it, but you can't tell me nothing when I walk in a space, where it's collegiates in the space. I don't care. If I'm in a room full of Harvard graduates or Yale graduates, I'm just as dope, if not doper. And that's just the, I finally learned how to transfer the confidence because I just feel like, I don't know, I just feel like it's something to be, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just something to feel honored of being a part of a collective when you understand how, you understand the complexities of how HBCUs came about, and how we were, how the our these founders of these HBCUs, these people that laid the bricks for us. Everything that they did, and that we're actually standing on the shoulders of what they did. There is so much pride in knowing that you are a part of a legacy that was laid out for you to be great. You are a part of a strong legacy. And it doesn't matter which one you go to, out of the ashes we come. You know what I'm saying? And that and that's exact, and that's how I feel. Like you can't, we can't be stopped. And there's nothing that you can say against us, because we have proven time and time again that we are not only worthy of being, being in the space of greatness, but we are the actual prototypes of it. So it's just,
They try to be like us.
they like, no, for real. No, for real, they do.
We are
So
the blueprint. We
we
are
are the
what they want to
blueprint.
be.
So that's I'm just, I'm just proud to be, and then it's also too, you have this network of people that you can call on at any given moment. You know what I'm saying? And if you treat folk right, let me say that, because you gotta be somebody in the
You
world
gotta
that's you gotta be somebody in the world that people want to fool with. But
right, y'all, be
you
nice to
do
people.
be,
If you
you know what I'm saying? Because you don't know, you know what I'm saying? That old saying is be careful of who you step on your way up, because they be the people that you meet coming back down. So just be careful of how you move, move with people and how you allow people to treat you. But like you have a network of people that really become these monuments in society and that can really help you and really, help you, or you can help them. You know what I mean? I have a treasure trove of people that I could call right now that are intricate in the industry that I'm in. You know what I'm saying? That I have people that I call my siblings, my brothers, my sisters, that are on some of the greatest, the biggest TV shows now that's out. You know what I mean? That they're doing their thing, or they're producers, or they're writers. You know, so or they're on Broadway. Like I literally have access to these people. I have access to people that can actually put money, in my pockets, because they're investing in my craft and in what I'm doing. So you never know you know, who these people turned out to be, you know, who they wound up being connected to. And so you have this, you have, you know, that's the other thing about, and I mean, and that happens in any college, but I think in HBCUs, because of the, you know, how the communities can come together and be so tight knit, these mm-hmm. networks that you form, that you have, really become like family to you, you know?
Right,
and so,
right.
you know, you find your tribe, you know, you find the people that's like you, you find the people that want to see you win, you know, not to say you don't find this in life. I'm just saying, and you know, everybody's there for one goal. They're there to get an education. That's the super objective, is to get an education, you would hope. And then you wind up finding family.
Right.
You know, you find your spouse. You know what I'm saying? You found your spouse.
Right.
You know? You know what I'm saying? You find your sister that you done, you know, you are only child, you know, coming into the world, and then you leave out of college and you have dozens of siblings that you
right.
can literally call at the drop of a hat and they'll be there. You know? So yeah,
my senior roommate was my maid of honor at my wedding. Like I called Kelsey for anything.
Yep.
You find that family, you find those connections at HBCUs.
You definitely do.
And it's somebody, it's literally like, even if you feel like, oh, you know, I'm in high school now, I really don't fit in, you know, I really don't have that many friends. It's some type of person, some type of group for everybody at a HBCU. Literally,
that is so true.
Anything. You can love Harry Potter. You can find a group of folks at a HBCU that love Harry Potter just as much as you do. You can find somebody that loves music just as much as you do. Find somebody that loves dance just as much. Find anybody that loves something as much as you do. I guarantee you it's at least one person there.
Yeah, you will definitely, the universe will definitely move to it, you know, will gravitate how you need it to move for you. You know what I'm saying? So when you get on that campus, you know, you're either going to gravitate towards where you need to be, or it's going to gravitate towards you. So you're definitely going to, you know, if you are in that kind of, you know, because my child is kind of like that. She's like, she only has a few, you know, a couple of friends that she really, you know, it's cool with, but not really at school, you know, she, you know, and she's like, I hope that I can, you know, make friends when I get, I'm like, you will be, you'll find the people that are just like you, or
right.
if they're not just like you, they are the people that complement you in a way that, you know, you all match, you all, you know, you all go together, you know what I'm saying? So you will definitely find your tribe for sure.
Right.
At an HBCU, if you're willing to. Now, let me say that too. Don't get out there thinking you all that, and you can't nobody talk to you. Well, then you ain't gonna find your tribe. So don't be, nah.
Yeah.
You know, you're not.
You can't come in all stuck up, because, oh no, that's not gonna work.
Exactly.
You gotta come in with an open mind and come in, you know, humble and open to meeting people and, you know, going a little bit outside of yourself.
And it might be different from what you're used to, but sometimes that's where you find the most beautiful people, you know, are those that are different from you, you know, and they bring out those things that you didn't know were in you. You
right.
know, so, and vice versa.
Right, right, right. Well, we're coming close to our time. So do you have any final words of advice for our listeners?
Choose an HBCU.
The number one thing.
The number one thing, choose an HBCU. Make sure, you know, if you can, make sure your money is in order, because ain't nothing like having to be in a financial aid line on HBCU, but you're gonna visit one at least one time in your experience. But make sure that your finances are in order, you know, so you don't have to worry about that part, because you know, trying to keep your lessons and your grades up, it's gonna be enough on your plate and trying to get involved. Make sure you get involved in different organizations just to broaden your palette of experience. It doesn't matter. It could be a book club. It could be just anything to kind of get you involved in something on campus. Because I can assure you, as a freshman coming in, you may not want to do anything right then. You might not have an idea of wanting to be in a fraternal order or anything like that, or a kind of organization. But I can guarantee you, by the time you get to that junior year or you get to that senior, you're going to wish you would have done something.
Mm-hmm.
You want to wish you would have been involved in something. So just don't be afraid to get out, get out into these little clubs and, have a good time, party, if that's something that you do. But also have a nice balance. Don't party too much. And don't work too hard. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To where there's, you're about to stress yourself out and you feel like you got burnout.
Right.
So you try to find you a balance. Talk to your family when you do go. Stay in touch with the people that love you, that's gonna keep you grounded, Get somewhere and get somewhere around people that do keep you grounded, that if you messing up, they hold you accountable
mm-hmm.
for your mess up. And I'm saying a whole lot, but these are all important factors just in being in college in general, but just like especially on the HBCU campus, because you do have these people that do care. They really do care. And so a lot of the times, if you ain't letting nobody know that this is what's going on with you, they don't know to help, and they can see stuff is going on with you, but you might, you might not let them know that it's all right for them to help you, or let them help you,
mm-hmm.
let them help you and let them keep you accountable for things that you do or don't do.
Right.
And also, let me see, anything else that I have? Make sure that you are keeping that GPA together.
Ooh-wee.
Cause you gonna regret it if you get up to that dang on graduation time and that GPA is looking crazy. Make sure you keep that GPA together.
Please, if you need to retake a class, retake the
class. Keep that GPA together. Please keep that GPA together, because it's the worst when it has fallen and it is so hard to build it back up. It mm-hmm. can be done, but it takes a lot of focus, a lot of concentration, a lot of, just unnecessary stress that you're going to put on yourself. So just keep it up. Just keep it up from the start. It's easier to do it that way.
Right. Yeah. Read those syllabuses and syllabi mm-hmm. and keep up with them assignments. Please keep
that's right.
Straight. Because if you want to pledge or some, things that you mm-hmm. want to be in, you have to have a certain GPA. So just make sure.
You definitely do, because I can tell you right now, you're not getting into Delta Sigma Theta with no 2 points. So get it together, and you need to do your community service. And so I don't know about them other organizations, but you need to do your community service to get an hour.
If
so
you want to pledge Delta, go ahead and find your place Delta. Of community service.
That's right. That's right.
Go and find that before you even get to school.
Y'all find it before you even get to school and commit.
You better look at
have your coins in order. You better have your coins in order.
If you got a sponsor, tell them, hey, it's rush this semester.
Exactly. I need my black, I need my white. Get it together. Get your stockings.
Go have all your clothes. Go have your shoes. Gonna have all of that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, all right. Thank you so much, Shanessa, for coming in, calling in, and
you are so welcome.
Sharing your words of wisdom and your story with us. And we're here to answer you all's questions. So if you have questions about, your specific HBCU or just about HBCUs in general, have questions about applying to scholarships, have questions about programs that you could apply to, you can have a question about the food and the dorms on campus. We don't care. We're here to answer any question you got. So So please, please, please go follow us on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook at I Went to an HBCU. And we will be having posts where you can come in the comments and ask questions, or you can DM us your questions, whatever you need to do. But if you have questions, please, 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 this is the place where you will get them answered. And yeah, that's all we have for today, y'all. Y'all be
thank
easy.
You so much.
Yes, thank you so much. All right, y'all be blessed.